Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Good evening and welcome to the Birch Aquarium at Scripps. My name is Nigella Hillgarth and I'm the Executive Director of the Birch Aquarium. And I'm delighted to welcome you to the most recent Jeffrey B. Graham Perspectives on Ocean Science. And it's my great pleasure this evening to introduce our speaker, Dr. Octavio Oberto Oropeza. Now, Octavio is a postdoctoral researcher here at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and he's the 2010 recipient of the World Wildlife Fund, WWF, Catherine Fuller Science for Nature Fund Fellowship. And he's also a professional photographer associated with the International League of Conservation Photographers. And I think you'll agree with me tonight, his photographs are absolutely amazing. And he has produced a book which is called Log of the Deep Sea. And it's absolutely beautiful, and you can buy it in our bookstore. Now, Oberto obtained his PhD actually here at Scripps at the Center for Marine Biodiversity and Conservation at SIO. And as you will hear, he has had a very, very long association with the aquarium. And he was awarded the Gene Fort Award by the University of California, San Diego, for his significant contribution to an issue of public concern that was the valuation of the environmental services provided by mangroves and coastal lagoons. And in fact, it was that work that really made a great change in public opinion in Mexico and really helped to prohibit land use change in mangrove lagoons. So a really important conservation contribution. And his research has also focused on marine reserves and commercially exploited marine species and their fisheries, not only in Mexico, but also Belize, Costa Rica, and indeed the United States. So we're absolutely delighted in having Octavio speak to us this evening. So please join with me in welcoming Octavio for his presentation, Marine Protected Areas, a Success Story.
Well, thank you very much for the invitation, for Nigella and to all of you to spend some time here talking about this success story, Cabo Pulmo, and also because it's a very honor to be here after many, many years. Very few people know that my relationship with the aquarium and Scripps started like 20 years ago when I was young. And I was a student at the Universidad Autónoma de Baja California Sur, and the Birch Aquarium and the university established a program, a research program, to study marine ecosystems in Mexico. Patricia Beller, that is here with us, was the liaison between all the activities that we did in the university and all the activities that the aquarium did here in San Diego. And also, the director in the university of that program was Professor Carlos Sanchez, and the director of the aquarium in that time was Donna Wilkie, that is right now also here with us. So I had the fortune of being involved with all these people, because every year the aquarium had these expeditions to go and collect fish and invertebrates in the waters of the Sea of Cortez to bring here and show them in the exhibitions. But parallel to these activities, we did research about marine communities and reef fish. So I had the fortune of learning from the directors, the people that work here at the aquarium, but also I had the fortune of met very, very nice people that support this program and believe that the things that we are doing will serve sometimes to all the things that are happening for the marine ecosystems, like Jeannie Kellogg, that is also here, and she supports the program for many, many years. I need to recognize that my career, my scientific career, started with this program. I gather all my the data for my bachelor thesis and also the data for my master thesis through this program. And some years later, this information was published in scientific journals. So basically, I need to recognize and give thanks the aquarium for all these things. And why I am mentioning this is because the story that I want to tell tonight started with these stories. In that days, every month for 2 years, we need to go and study this archipelago near to La Paz, an archipelago of mainly four islands, and we spend a lot of time in some of these islands, especially the one at the north, Los Islotes. And in 2 years, when I had 19 years old, I did a lot of diving. I got in my first two years of scientific diver more than 1,000 dives, and I got all this information that published with my thesis. And as you know, as scientists, we like to do these ugly graphs and do these complicated analyses. I don't know why do we complicate nature like that, but because actually my results were very simple. With my thesis, I showed that some species like to live in rocky habitats like walls and boulders, and other species like to live in soft bottom habitats like black coral. So with my thesis, I present or I describe some characteristics, habitat characteristics, that predicts which species we will see in that kind of habitat. But imagine this, after more than 1,000 dives, after having counted thousands of fish and thousands of invertebrates, the largest species that I saw in that time was this species that it's a grouper, the leopard grouper, that the individuals that I counted never surpassed 80 centimeters. They were like this size. And when I went to study marine biology, one of the things that motivated me to go and study marine biology and know the Gulf of California was documentaries like The Legacy of the Sea of Cortez by Jacques Cousteau. That in that documentary you can see large fishes and very amazing reef communities. And also when I was doing my thesis, I had to read many literature that said about these huge monsters and these huge fish and all these sharks that were living in the reefs and the seamounts from the Sea of Cortez. And I didn't see them. So very, very soon I realized that I was not studying natural reefs. And the fishing effort that growth in that time or exponentially increased since the 70s, of course, was one of the things that caused the reduction of many of these communities or many of these fish. And if you look carefully, you can see the evidence of this overfishing. From tiny animals that live in mudflats or in sand bottoms, and that which have been extracted by 1,000, to large predators that have been hunted for their high market prices. So at the beginning, I thought that these patterns were very localized because I only knew areas around La Paz Bay, I have dove only in some islands, so I thought that this overfishing was occurring only in that part. I didn't have by that time a regional perspective of the entire Gulf of California. But this changed in 1999 when, after collaborating with the Birch Aquarium, then we started collaborating with scientists from Scripps Institution of Oceanography. I had the honor of starting working with Dr. Paul Dayton, and also in that time one of his postdoctoral students, Dr. Enrique Sala. And in 1999, we decided to do a regional assessment of the health of the reefs along the entire Gulf of California. So we did it in a very, very unconventional way. We used this white band that you are seeing here in the slide. Actually, that band also was donated by the Scripps to the aquarium to the university. So using that band, we cross all the peninsula. We cross and see a lot of beautiful landscapes. And we use a 4-meter Zodiac boat, these tiny inflatable boats, a small compressor and some diving tanks. And the crazy idea was to survey or to sample all the rocky shores along the Gulf of California from Cabo San Lucas all the way up to the Midriff Islands. For people, it took us 3 months to do this. We dove in more than 70 reefs, and we surveyed a lot of square meters on the water. And in that time, my perspective changed a lot, because we dove inside the mangrove roots, this coastal forest that you can see inside the bays. So we were describing, or we need to describe which species were using these habitats as nursery habitats. We also dove, or we also survey sargasso beds, and this is a habitat made of brown algae, like the kelp forest that you can see here in California. But this habitat, this sargasso, are smaller, and also this kind of habitat disappear in summer. The algae disappear because the temperature increases. And also, we visited a lot of rocky reefs, boulders, walls, in coastal areas, but also in several islands along the Gulf. We dove deep in habitats like black coral gardens that are below 20 or 25 meters. Sometimes these habitats are very spooky because the coral forms this huge like forest. But also we dove very, very deep. Sometimes we dove at 50 meters depth to survey the marine communities in seamounts. So we were young and strong, so we did all this work. And after counted hundreds of thousands of fish and invertebrates, we did many of these drawings that described how the habitats were, and also we did all these drawings about the islands, and we took a lot of notes about the natural history of the species and the ecosystems. And we put all the information in a very, very sophisticated software, in this case a GIS software. We put all the species that we saw, all the animals that we saw as well, in each of the islands, in each of the coast. And at the end, the final map of our research adventure was this. We surveyed almost every corner of the rocky shores along the Gulf of California. and described the state of the reefs in all these habitats in 1999. Some years later, in 2002, we published a report about all these findings. And this report basically said, or in this report, we proposed a network of 24 areas where we consider important to establish no-take marine reserves, that basically are areas where everything, all the extractive activities are prohibited. So these are the 24 areas, and if this network will be implemented, this network will have protected a large amount of habitats, very important habitats like mangroves, seagrasses, and corals, but also will have protected very important ecological processes, like, for example, fish spawning aggregations that are areas where fish congregate to reproduce in very, very large numbers, hundreds or thousands. You will see some of the pictures. During the last 10 years, after we published this report, the Mexican government have been implementing some marine protected areas in some of the areas that we said that were very, very important. Two areas were before we started our study. Cabo Pulmo, that it's a very small marine protected area in the south part of the Gulf of California, and Bahia de Loreto. These two were Cabo Pulmo established in 1995 and Loreto in 1996. But after that, the Mexican government established San Pedro Mártir in 2002, San Lorenzo Archipelago de San Lorenzo in 2005, and then Bahia de Los Angeles and Archipelago de Espíritu Santo in 2007. The most important thing that I want to highlight here in this slide is that all these areas are marine protected areas, are not necessarily no-take marine reserves. Basically, these areas allow fishing in the majority of the parks, and very, very small areas are the ones that are no-takes. For example, Bahía de Los Ángeles has some 3,800 square kilometers, and only 0.05% is no-take, that is called the core zone. Basically, that represents land, only 2 square kilometers that nobody can fish there, but it's too small. But look at the example of Cabo Pulmo. It's the tiniest marine protected area in the Gulf of California, but 100% of the area, 100% of the 71 square kilometers are no take. Basically, nobody can fish, nobody can extract anything from the park since 1995, so it's already 16 years. Why this area is 100% is because the people, the local people, the people that live in the town of Cabo Pulmo decided to convert the entire area in no-take. So 10 years later, many things have happened, but the majority of the news are negative changes. Of course, I don't want to say anything about that, or I won't speak about these negative changes, but instead I'm gonna share with you some of the things that we have found in Cabo Pulmo, in the only real marine protected area in the Gulf of California. 10 years later, I participated in another regional expedition along the Gulf of California. This time we use a boat, fortunately. So we bring 15 people. The crew was a crew of 15 people. I collaborate with Dr. Phil Hastings, now here professor at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, and also Dr. Ezequiel Escurra from UC Riverside. And we, in 1 month, we surveyed 147 reefs, and also we sampled a lot of square meters on the water. So this is one of the main result of what has happened. On average, the amount of fish and their sizes that together are the biomass of the fish slightly has been reduced in those reefs that don't have any protection, the reefs that are open access to everyone. Nothing has changed between the reefs inside the marine protected areas, in the core zones. Between 1999 and 2009, nothing has changed. And this is a bad sign, because imagine how much money has been invested in all these areas, and in 10 years, nothing has changed. But look at Cabo Pumo. Cabo Pumo in 1999 was almost similar to any reef or reefs in the Gulf of California, but 10 years later, it's a 460% of change in the biomass of fish. But also there is something more or something important as well, is the change here of the different species that are part of the reef community. The changes are different because the top predators and the carnivores, that are the black and the light grays, also change more than the other fishes. That changes from this to here and from this to here are almost 1,000% of change in 10 years. So I think you don't need statistics to know that this is a significant change in 10 years. But let me show you how these changes in the species have occurred with some images. Here is a diver. It's one of the divers that has been diving with us in all these years in Cabo Pumo. And this is an astonishing wall of fish, of jacks, big eye trevallis, that you can see inside Cabo Pumo. Imagine all the food that you need to maintain all these fish. The other group that is very important are the snappers, yellow snappers, hundreds of yellow snappers, hundreds of dog snappers, species, in particular these species that can reach 1 meter in length, swimming everywhere. And also groupers, moray eels, parrot fishes, all of them swimming between very healthy corals, very healthy sea fans. And actually, Cabo Pumo is an amazing place. And for me, this area, after all or hundreds of dives that I already have in Cabo Pumo, for me, this area is like a time machine. Now I can see some of the species that I never saw in all these dives along the Gulf of California, and all the species that were mentioned in the literature. And actually, it's an image that you can understand why Jacques Cousteau called the aquarium of the world the Sea of Cortez when you see images like this. And there are several things related to the amazing recuperation that Cabo Pumo has had. But one important piece, or two important pieces, are the size of the area and also the enforcement of the area by the local people. Around the world, right now, there are like 5,000 MPAs, marine protected areas. But very few are no-take, the blue dots in these maps. in this map. There are very, very few of these no-take areas like Cabo Pumo. But also, these no-take areas, the majority of the no-take areas are less, or they have less than 10 square kilometers. Actually, I think they are less than 1 square kilometer, like the ones that we have here in California, here in Monterrey. These two are less than 1 square kilometer. So when you have an area like Cabo Pumo, it's 70 times bigger than the most of the no-take marine protected areas around the world, and protected in a way or very well enforced for 16 years. With this, the combination of these two, you can explain why is the no-take marine reserve that has gained all this absolute biomass recovery. And also can explain why, or may explain why, the top predators have increased very, very fast. Every year, 30% of the biomass of the top predators is replenished and put it inside the reef community. And in the next slides, I will tell you, or I will show you, that these positive changes are beyond the biomass. There are other changes very important that we are seeing in this community. The fish species increased almost twice compared with 1999. So we are seeing more and more species, and this basically represent that Cabo Pumo is getting a more mature community, and there are more species occupying different ecological niches or different ecological roles, and this is very important. Also, there are more fish, but also they are forming larger groups. And this characteristic in the case of herbivores, fish, such as the sturgeon fishes, is helping in the recovery of the corals and the recovery of the entire reefs. Because herbivores control the algae that grow on the rocks and compete with corals for space. And basically having more herbivores, bigger herbivores, they are controlling the population of all these species, especially the algae. So we are seeing cleaner reefs and healthier coral populations. But the differences in sizes are not only in herbivorous fish. I think it's in general we are seeing bigger fish in the entire community. And I think there is no other reef in the Gulf of California that can be compared with the reefs in Cabo Pumo about the size structure that the species have. Basically, the larger organism that we are seeing in the Gulf of California are inside Cabo Pumo. And let me talk about this particular species that is the Gulf grouper, and it's a species that can reach 2 meters in length and can weigh more than 100 kilograms. And it's like other big groupers, it's in the IUCN red list because it's an endangered species. Gulf grouper, it's an endemic species from the Gulf of California, and all along the region is threatened by many extractive activities, especially spear fishing during the reproduction seasons. And this species, there are information that this species 50 years ago was very, very abundant. In just one day of fishing, you can catch more than 25 individuals larger than 1 meter. And only one fishing camp in a season in those days, the season went from March to June, that fish camp can get 60 tons of this species. Today, in a fishing day, you cannot caught more than two fish larger than 60 centimeters. And if you put all together all the fish in the Gulf of California, you cannot get the 60 tons in the entire region. In 14 years of underwater surveys that we have for the Gulf of California, the 30% of the individuals that we have counted in these 14 years have been counted or registered here in Cabo Pulmo. And these individuals, the majority of these individuals, are the largest individuals that we have seen of this species. So Cabo Pulmo confirms that by using no-take marine reserves, we can recover population of endangered species. So I think this is a very good example of the importance of no-take marine reserves. The other thing that is changing is the behavior of the fish. Together with my colleague Grant Galland from Scripps, we published this short paper about a tiny fish. It's just 5 centimeters. It's the saber-tooth blenny, and it's a fish that feed on the scales of other fishes. They go and bite them very aggressively to get the scales of that fish. And before the recuperation of Cabo Pulmo, we know that these blennies have a very, very a very clear strategy of how to attack other fish. Basically, they mimic the coloration of this grass, the rainbow grass. So they hide between all these grasses and attack other fish by surprise. So basically, you have one of these blennies here among 100 of grasses. And this is in many, many reefs, many overfished reefs. But in Cabo Pulmo, there are hundreds of blennies without grasses. There is no grasses. There is no mimicry. And there is no fear. We don't know why or how this happened or why this is happening, but we know that they attack other fishes with no mercy. And they can change the behavior of many other species, especially the big top predators. They like to bite very aggressively snappers and groupers. So imagine a fish that is attacked at the same time by 10 or 20 of these fish. They leave the reef very quickly, and I think they think twice before approaching to the reef again. So the behavior of the fish is changing. Fish are more confident, they are more curious, and very often they approach to the divers, especially those species that are very, very scared of divers in reefs that there are no protection. Yes, groupers know that they will be hunted by spear fishing guys or by fishermen, so they don't interact with humans. But in Cabo Pulmo is different. And this behavior is allowing us to study them in a better ways. And one of the things that we have been doing together with my colleague as well here in Scripps, Dr. Brad Erisman, we have been studying the behavior of these species when they reproduce. Leopard grouper is one of the species that form very, very large spawning aggregations. They form groups up to 500 individuals, all together in very, very particular sites to reproduce. During the day, the fish hang around together above the reefs. But in the afternoon, tens of males start bothering one female. So the females go inside the corals, inside the caves, and all these males trying to conquer them, and they persevere until after sunset, once the reef is almost dark, many groups of one female and tens of males, they swim to the surface and spawn. And it's a truly amazing spectacle to see all these groups reproducing together. Another species that we have studied very well, the reproduction behavior, is the big-eyed trevally. They are jacks, and we have obtained video and photography about the reproduction courtship. This is a picture that I took in Las Animas 2008. It's an open access reef. Everybody can go and fish in that reef. And in 1999, we know about this species because we saw huge groups of this species in Las Animas. But now, 2008, 10 years later, you can see that the aggregation has been overfished. When you go to Cabo Pulmo, you see the real size of how this aggregation used to be, and in that way we can study them very very well. During the day, the individuals go through these beautiful courtship patterns. They move in circles from the surface to the deep, 20 or 30 meters deep. The fish congregate more and more until they form this tornado of fish that as well moves from the bottom to the surface and vice versa. And in the afternoon, the group compacted and all the fish remains in the sandy bottoms, and they form this huge ball of fish. So the ball start moving in circles, and every now and then a pair of fishes go out from the circles. So you can see one individual silver and one black. The black one is the male, the silver one is the female. So you can see the pairs that are forming between the group is doing these circles. And in the afternoon, you can see all the pairs in the surface again. Unfortunately, we haven't been able to see when, in the moment when they spawn, and probably it has to be very, very impressive. But this is the kind of things that you can do when you are studying a natural community and the natural levels of the abundance of species. So let me tell you, or let me finish this part of the presentation saying that Cabo Pulmo is reaching a state where top predators basically are controlling the entire community. And this is very important because it has been shown that top predators increase the productivity of the reefs. Basically, they maintain their prey in certain abundance and also in certain sizes, and also they push them to reproduce more often so they can get more food and for larger fish. And in Cabo Pulmo, as there are groupers and snappers, but also we are seeing that Cabo Pulmo is attracting more and more sharks. These are sharks. This is an aerial picture that I took in February last year, and all these are sharks. And it's a group that has bull sharks and black tip reef sharks. And we are collaborating with another research group that is tagging these sharks. And with these tags, we have learned that all these sharks are using Kabupumo to mate. But also, well, after they mate, some of them leave the reefs. But some of them remains in the boundaries of the park, especially these ones that are the bull sharks. And I think that they know that there is food in the area, and they won't move to another area that it's overfished. So I think in the near future we will see more sharks, and this is good. So let me finish with some thoughts. Well, you may know that we are facing with a global oceans crisis. The majority of the fisheries that we have, of the majority of the fisheries around the world, are collapsing. Coral reefs are disappearing. Marine ecosystems are more polluted, and the entire ocean productivity is decreasing very, very fast. And people think that the major problem is how much fishing pressure we are putting in all these reefs, and of course this is very important, and it's one of the major problems that we have. But I think that we cannot forget that this fishing pressure is closely related with the unsustainable coastal development that we have produced or we have generated in many, many areas around the world. And this is Cancun. It's a very good example of the thing that I am saying, because Cancun has surpassed the capacity of the region. The Cancun started in this sandy bar. Now look all the resorts that Cancun has. But the problem is that all the interior mangroves, the nursery habitats that Cancun has, almost all have disappeared. And also, the coral reefs are dying because the pollution and because other factors. So basically, you eliminate the nursery habitats and you eliminate the spawning grounds. So maybe we need to think, well, we know that most of the food, the fish, or the natural resources that we need to sustain this tourism in that area has to be imported from other areas. So in the other side of Mexico, we have Cabo San Lucas. It's closest to here. Just 2 hours south to Cabo Pumo. And this area has one of the highest growth rates in the entire Gulf, and probably in Mexico, and probably around the world. It's 10% every year. Cabo San Lucas grows in 10% every year. And of course, the area is now experiencing problems, especially with fresh water, but also has lost estuaries and also overfished most of the reefs. Another example, this is Loreto. It's north Cabo San Lucas, it's north La Paz. This was a nice estuary. It's a large, nice estuary with a large mangrove area. And in this case, that area was destroyed, this ecosystem was destroyed to build these golf courses. And again, there is no fresh water because you know that Baja California, it's a desert. And most of the water was used to maintain this unnatural system. The company went bankrupt. The owners left. And of course, the ecosystem is degraded. And all the cost of this environmental degradation, it's now for the local communities. So in the middle of these sad stories, we have the example of Cabo Pumo, a small town that chose a different destiny of the examples that I show you. they changed their lifestyle because all these people were fishermen. 16 years ago, they were fishing the reefs, and they changed their lifestyle. They left their nets, they left their fishing boats, and decided to protect the reefs. And now they are taking tourists to see the wonderful marine life that they have in the waters inside the park. And they know that this protection is attracting human visitors, but also it's attracting another species. Like I show you the sharks, but this is another species that are attracted every year. And these are Mobula rays that come to Cabo Pulmo, and also we don't know very clear, but we think they come and mate as well in the area of Cabo Pulmo. And this this is very nice as a natural event, but also it's a very good tourism attraction, yes? So a healthy marine ecosystem is giving several opportunities to generate economic benefits. So, and maybe you can, many people think that they right now are only preserving the reefs and they are not doing something that they like fishing. And this is not true because they continue fishing outside the boundaries of the park. They take sport fishermen to fish tuna, wahoo, and other species that congregate some miles outside the boundaries of the park. We are trying to give more information about this, but it seems that the production of the park, all the images that I show you, also this production is attracting species like tuna or wahoo. So it's a win-win scenario. You protect something and you can generate also income in other kind of activities. So basically Cabo Pulmo, or the people from Cabo Pulmo, is showing that their model of coastal development, it's a better way to do these things. In 2006, before the economic crisis that we are crossing, they generate a considerable amount in revenues. And basically, in relative terms, in per capita income, they did a very, very nice job. And way above the average in Mexico and maybe in other parts. And even now, with this huge economic crisis, I think Cabo Pulmo is not falling apart like other places. Cabo San Lucas is one. I think that times are hard like in the rest of the world, but they are not compromising the things that they have been protecting from 16 years ago. I think they know that the beauty of the land and the beauty of the ocean that they have will attract more and more visitors in the next years and will generate enough work to sustain the community in the long term. So this is the story of Cabo Pulmo. And I think it's a story that we must replicate in many other parts of Mexico and maybe in the world. Thank you. Well, I think the question is why in other parts of the Gulf of California they are not following the example that Cabo Pulmo has been. And I think it's a combination of many factors. One that I think is very important is the communication. Even people in the Gulf of California don't know about the recovery of Cabo Pulmo. Even people in Mexico, in other parts, in Mexico City, don't know about this great example. And unfortunately, in the last since August last year, we started pushing to communicate this example, and we are trying to reach more people and sharing this story with many people, because maybe if we see the recovery or if we can share all this graphic material, maybe it will inspire other people to change and to create more Cabo Pumas. Yeah, well, the Mexican government has, how they protect the area, how they enforce the area. Mexican government has been investing money. There are staff of one branch of Mexico, one branch of the Mexican government that is in charge of protected areas. So there is a director of the area, and there is few staff that work together with the community. But basically, the area is not too big. Basically, it's that bay, and they use the boats to if they see someone to go inside the area and it's trolling or it's fishing, they go with the boats and request them to fish outside the area. And although they don't have any authority to do that, I think this has been very helpful to change the behavior of many people around the area. And now this is the enforcement that they do, basically. And I think they need more support in that respect. I think we need to invest more in these efforts. What other restrictions there are in MPAs along the Gulf of California, yes, beside the core zones, beside the no-take areas? In some areas, there are restrictions of fishing gear, for example. So there are areas that you cannot use, you cannot troll, or there are areas that you cannot fish with gill nets or with nets or long lines. This is the majority or the main restrictions in other areas. But I think the important problem or the huge problem is the enforcement. Because the enforcement is not necessarily the responsibility of the park, the directors or the staff of the marine protected area. The responsibility of enforce the fishing or the extractive activities belong to the fisheries department. And there is a huge issue between the collaboration the two agencies, the environmental agencies and the fisheries department. There is, the question is that it's a comment that there is a huge development project, a tourist development project to be built near Cabo Pumo. So I'm going to say something about this issue. The project is the name is Cabo Cortez, and it's a huge development, bigger than Cabo San Lucas. Cabo San Lucas has like 11,000 rooms, hotel rooms, and this development that is projected to be 4 kilometers north to Cabo Pulmo. They are proposing 30,000 rooms or hotel rooms. So it's a huge development, and they want to build a marina, but for example, in Cabo Pumo, this area, this bay is a natural bay. In Cabo Pumo, you don't have bays. you only have the cost. So they are planning to build a marina for 400 boats, but they need to drag or to build the marina. It's an interior marina, so they need to remove thousands of tons of sediment in order to build this marina. And of course, because it's very close to Cabo Pumo, there are a lot of evidence that predicts that all this sedimentation, all this sediment will reach in one way or another the reefs in Cabo Pumo. The status of the development is very uncertain because the company went to bankrupt as well, and they have to sold the land to one Spaniard bank. So right now the owner it's a bank in Spain, and we don't know what they are their plans to develop the area, and we don't know if they will continue with the proposed plan that the Mexican government authorized in 2008, or if they will change that plan and they will try to do something different.
Well, we're going to cut it off here, but I'm sure Octavio would be glad to answer questions afterward. But I want to thank you again, Octavio, for a wonderful talk.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.